Okay, so I'm going to talk about this work done essentially with Gordon Ogilvy from Cambridge and Sébastien Froment, now in the CEA. So first, let me introduce what we know about MHD turbulence in disks. So as you have seen, I guess, this morning, we have very powerful instability, which is called the magneto-rotational instability. It provides a very efficient source of turbulence in disks, as you can see, for example, in the animation from a global simulation. And what interests astrophysicists is that this instability leads actually to a quite strong turbulent transport of angular momentum. That's very important if you want to understand, for example, the dynamic of a disk. But as we all know, I guess, is that since you have MHD turbulence, you can also have a source of large-scale magnetic field. So I guess we will have many examples during this conference. And the fact that you have large-scale magnetic fields is very interesting also for a disk. For example, if you want to understand how you can launch a wind, or if you want to understand how you can collimate a jet from a disk, you need such a large-scale field. It's also very important to understand the interaction, for example, between the central star and the disk. So the question I would like to ask today is, can we find and can we describe something which is similar to a kind of disk dynamo? So to describe this dynamo, you first start with a local model. This local model has been described already by Jim Stone, so I won't go into the details. It's the so-called shoeing box model. So you just have a disk. You pick up a small part of this disk, and you zoom in, and you find this Cartesian box, which is in which you find a shear and a rotation in the vertical axis. So basically, you're studying a rotating shear flow. In my case, I use the incompressible approximation, and it's periodic in all the directions, azimuthal, vertical, and the radial direction. And I use a 3D spectral method with a Wimmer procedure as well. So then there are some open questions, and the first thing to do is to analyze what's going on in this shoeing box when you don't assume that you have any mean field. In this case, we have seen this morning that if you don't have any mean field, you have some funny behavior. So formally, in a case when you don't have any mean field, you don't have any linear instability. I mean, the magneto-rotational instability doesn't exist formally in a box in which you don't have a mean field. So the first question is obviously how you can sustain a turbulence in such a system. So you have to assume that in some way you are originating your magnetic field, which means that you have a dynamo process. The second question is how do we explain the fact that you have such a strong dependency on the magnetic quantum number. You have here this plot from Froment et al. Showing that you can't actually get turbulence for quantum numbers smaller than one. And nobody actually understands these 2 points. So the very wolf phenomenological picture we have in mind here is that you have this kind of loop. So we start with a given magnetic field in the box. You have on the top of that some kind of magneto-rotational instability which provide and excite a velocity field. In turn, this velocity field acts as a kind of dynamo process, and we excite your magnetic field. What is very interesting in this very simple picture is that to get this loop, you need a finite amplitude magnetic field in the beginning. Why? Because this instability will work once you will have a large enough magnetic field. And it means that the whole process has to be a non-linear dynamo. So the thing I want to insist here is that the whole process making turbulence in the shoeing box has to be a non-linear dynamo. And you can't actually catch it with a kinematic dynamo approach. So the first step toward the understanding of this non-linear dynamo in disks has been done by François Racon et al. In 2007 with something which is a non-linear steady solution, which has been found in quet flows. So these quet flows are actually very similar to the shoeing box, except that you have a no-slip perfectly conducting walls in the radial direction. So this is two plots coming from these steady solutions. The first one is the vertical field in the x-y plane. So this is the azimuthal direction and radial direction. And you see quite clearly that you have a non-axisymmetric solution. So of course you would expect that, and you confirm here that you need a non-axisymmetric solution to get this nonlinear dynamo. The second plot shows you the total magnetic field in the ZR plane. The colors are actually the azimuthal component of your magnetic field, and the arrows correspond to the polaroidal component. And you find, I think, quite clearly that you have a nice vertical structure for your azimuthal field. You have one oscillation here in the box. And it seems that with this solution, you have two basic ingredients in this nonlinear dynamo. The first one is, of course, a non-axisymmetric solution. The second one is a large scale B phi of Z. Unfortunately, you can't actually find this kind of solution in a Schering box, mainly because this one is a global solution and it's related to the presence of walls in your system. So our idea was to understand whether it was possible to find the same kind of solution in a Schering box, meaning that we are looking for local nonlinear dynamo. And we actually find something which is quite similar. So we started looking at this large-scale structure in the vertical direction. And we actually found a large-scale structure. So this is an example from a Schering box simulation without any net flux. So you have just turbulence happening in here, in it. And you find here it's a 3D plot of the azimuthal field. And you find a vertical structure. I guess it's quite obvious on this plot. Of course, you have some non-axisymmetric structure, and this whole thing is moving all the time. But you have this mean structure here, and you can actually follow the amplitude in time of this large-scale structure, and you find cycles. So this is a Fourier analysis of the flow showing the amplitude of this large-scale structure, and you find cycles regenerating and destroying your large-scale structure you have in the flow. The second plot here shows you the phase, and it just tells you that once you have creating your structure, it just stays here, and then it's destroyed consistently by the turbine. So let me just show you one example of such a cycle in a simulation. So we start, this is a 3D plot of B phi. We start with no structure, as you can see. Progressively, you build up this large-scale structure B phi of Z, and at this point, I guess it's quite clear that you have a vertical structure. Then this structure is going to be destroyed by some non-axisymmetric waves. And in the end of the cycle, you will end up with basically a very chaotic flow, as you can see here. So once you know that you have a cycle and you have your vertical structure, we've been wondering what kind of process actually generates this structure and destroys it. So let's take a look at the induction equation. Hopefully you can see all the terms. This is the induction equation for the large scale structure I was talking about. So this is the B phi component, and this is the radial magnetic field component. So for the azimuthal component, you have basically three terms. The first one is related to the shear of your radial field lines. So this is a classical omega term in the alpha omega dynamo. You have a term due to the EMF, which actually involves a coupling between various terms which can be axisymmetric, and a resistive term. For the radial field, you have just an EMF and a resistive term. So the left plot shows you the time evolution during one cycle of each of these terms here in the first equation. The blue line is the amplitude of B phi, so you see that you have one cycle. The green line is the shear term. So you see that in the beginning of one cycle, you have a positive shear term, which means that this term, the shear term, is actually creating your structure. Then this shear term gets reversed, and it actually destroys your structure. So basically, the cycle comes from the shear term. If you now take a look at what's going on with the EMF, you see that this term is always negative on this plot, which means that this term is actually always trying to pump and destroy your structure. Now, if you take a look at the resistive, at the radial component, you see something which is kind of oscillating also, and you see especially that your oscillation actually comes from the E phi term here. So basically, you have two ingredients in there. You know that this term is always resisted, and you know that the oscillation actually comes from this term, which creates some radial field, and there's this radial field is sheared and creates an azimuthal field. So we wanted to understand how this thing was actually working. And the first thing you want to know is which kind of waves actually contribute to the EMF. So this analysis is shown here. You have here the contribution of various non-axisymmetric waves to your EMF you had in the previous slide. And you see quite clearly, I guess, that most of your EMFs in this system comes from the n phi equal 1 waves, which are coupled together. And it seems that actually these EMFs are produced by the largest non-axisymmetric waves of your system. So basically, you can say that you have a dynamo which is working with the largest waves you have in your system. Of course, it involves non-axisymmetric waves, but it's still a large-scale process. And you end up with the same conclusion for the radial EMF. So now we wanted to understand why this EMF working like that, and maybe it was possible to understand just considering one set of non-axisymmetric waves. So let's see with a kind of basic model what's going on in this system. So I assume to begin with a large-scale field of this kind. So it's an azimuthal field with a vertical structure. I just start with that, and I want to know if I put some non-axisymmetric waves in the system, what will happen? So I put my non-axisymmetric waves. These are Schwing waves. These are linear Schwing waves. So they have radial wave vector, which is evolving in time. And then I want to know what is the EMF associated with this linear Schwing wave. So you get this EMF. And in the end, what you want to know is how this non-axisymmetric structure get in the end related to your large-scale field. So you compute basically two coefficients. So I won't go into the details here, but just to mention that these gamma phi actually compute what can be related to the diagonal term of your resistive tensor, and this gamma r here compute the non-isotropic resistive term in your equation. So you see that gamma phi actually compute the correlation between this term and what you have imposed in the beginning, and gamma r compute the correlation of this term with what you have imposed. So you can do this linear analysis. It's quite straightforward numerically, less straightforward if you want to do that analytically, but you can do both. And you find in the end there's plots. So each of these plots show the time history of non-axisymmetric waves if you assume that you have this large-scale field. So you can find that for each of these waves, you have a transient amplification. It's just a signature that you have some magneto-rotational instability amplifying these waves, and then these waves are dissipated by a resistive process. But you have a signature that you have the magneto-rotational happening for each of these waves here. Then let's take a look at the first line, this gamma phi, and this is for each of these plots, I put a larger large-scale field. You see that gamma phi is always negative, which means that the classical resistivity is all, well, the classical turbulent resistivity is always trying to dissipate the large-scale structure you have put in the beginning. And then if you take a look at gamma r, you see a very interesting behavior. In the beginning, this correlation is positive, and the correlation gets reversed once your field is strong enough. And you can guess, I think, quite easily that the fact that this large-scale structure is destroyed and then regenerated comes from the fact that you have a reversal of this non-diagonal term. So you can understand that, I guess, with a very simple toy model in which I have just assumed a turbulent resistivity. So these are the two equations for the large-scale structure I had in the beginning. For the EMF, I've used a simple turbulent resistivity, it's a classical model. And for the radial component, I have, once again, another turbulent resistivity. This one is a non-isotropic turbulent resistivity. And this gamma coefficient actually changes its signs once B phi is large enough. So it's really exactly the same thing as we had in the linear analysis. Now, if you put that in a computer, you find cycles with typically the same period, with typically the same amplitude for each of the terms in the induction equation. What is very important in this model is that I'm not using any alpha effect. It's basically due to a turbulent resistivity, which is not isotropic. And that's, I guess, quite important, because people are always talking about the alpha effect. But you can have also some other effect, which can be very important for dynamo process. So let's sum up this process. We start with, let's say, a large scale B-phi. This B-phi provide an MRI amplification of some non-axisymmetric waves. And these non-axisymmetric waves have two back reactions. First, they dissipate your large-scale field. And second, they have a dynamo action on the radial field. And then you have a loop, which is a kind of alpha-omega loop, in which you involve the mean shear to regenerate your B-phi from the radial magnetic field. Of course, there are some things which are missing in this model, mainly because you have to assume that you had non-axisymmetric waves in the first place. So you have to find a way to regenerate your non-axisymmetric waves, because they are dissipated in the end. So here, I have just assumed that I have some kind of non-linear coupling and feedback to regenerate non-axisymmetric structure in the system. But basically, you have here the mechanism I was talking about in one of my first slides. So what? So I would say first that the magneto-rotational instability seems to provide a natural and non-linear dynamo feedback when you just assume that you have a non-homogeneous B-phi. In my case, it explains the existence of these large-scale cycles. They do not depend on the dissipation scale, because it's a process which can work essentially in ideal MHD. And the last point, which is quite important, is that this dynamo feedback is not related to an alpha effect. It's a proper anisotropic resistive effect. There are some things which are not really understood. The first thing is, of course, we don't really understand how you can generate this non-axisymmetric structure. They are regenerated by the turbulence, but you don't really know how. As I was saying before, and as Jim was saying before, we don't really understand how the quantum number enters this whole scheme. And the last thing is, it's quite hard to know whether this mechanism is able to generate global magnetic field. Of course, it can generate magnetic field in your box, which is a small part of the disk. But is this mechanism able to generate some kind of large-scale field able to, for example, collimate a jet? For now, nobody knows. Well, thank you.
You have a time delay in these toy equations.
Yes.
If you didn't have the time delay, the solution, would it depend on the sine of gamma? Gamma naught.
No, I put the time delay so that, well, it was.
So turn it off. If you turn off the time delay,
yes.
I think you have a linearly excited solution, but only for negative signs of gamma.
The gamma is always negative provided that you have a B-phi which is small enough.
Yes.
Is gamma.
Gamma naught is negative,
you say. It's assumed to be positive. So
gamma naught is positive.
It depends on the sign of this term.
Yes.
So it can also work with TL equals zero.
Yes. So it's a kinematic situation, first of all, if it works. That would be a kinematic dynamo?
It appears to be a kinematic dynamo here, or in this closure model, but it's clearly not, because there's especially this effect appears because in this model you have this correlation which gets reversed, and this effect comes from the MRI. So you can't assume that it's a kinematic process. You need a non-negligible large-scale field.
So what about the sine of gamma? Can you check in the simulations that the sine of gamma is indeed negative?
Well, all you can do is let's see. All you can do is check what is the actual EMF doing during one simulation. And you see actually that, well, maybe it's not clear here, but you see that for small enough, well, let's say in the beginning of the cycle, EFI is positive. And when you reach a point which is about 0.1 here, EFI gets reversed. So it means if you assume that EFI and BFI are correlated with turbulent resistivity thing, it means that your coefficient is reversed. And it's reversed consistently with what we find in the linear analysis. But that's
the reliable way of calculating gamma naught would be the test field method. And that's what we have done already, although only for stratified disks. And in that case, the sign of gamma is positive. So this mechanism would not work.
Yes, I agree with you.
And would your method work for zero rotation?
Because it needs the magneto-rotational instability. So if you have zero rotation.
Then you would need some forcing.
Yeah. But so yes, if you have some forcing, then yes.
So our proposal is that it's an incoherent alpha effect, you know.
Yeah, I know that. But we can discuss that. But in my opinion, it's an anisotropic resistive effect. In this case.
Just to add to that comment, that this toy model has built-in linearity. You just transform the nonlinear problem into a linear one. But I mean, the result is more general than the toy model. It's a fully 3D result which involves J cross B, and as people know for MRI dynamo, so it's really fully nonlinear.
I was just wondering if does E dot B maintain the same sign every cycle? I think the toy model has that, and I wondered how that correlates with the actual model.
Let's be precise. It's not really E dot B. It's here, for example, it's DZE.
Yeah,
so it's DZE and B which get correlated.
DZE and B.
Which is why it's a turbulent resistivity and not an alpha effect.
I guess the thing that I was seeking is the thing that would produce it. Yeah, so I mean, there's something has to flip sign every, be random, stochastic, and cycle. But you would think that if it were a systematic, kind of helical, systematic thing, that the E dot B, or itself E dot B, would maintain the same sign over, but if that's not the case, then you know, if it's finite but not the case, that it maintains the same sign, that's different from the case where it does maintain the same correlated sign. And I just wondered we can talk about that.
Well, just to mention that it's clearly not a helical dynamo in this case, and the main helicity is very small and actually produced by the resistive process you have at small scale. And in the toy model, especially, you don't have to assume any kind of helicity. And actually, in the toy model, the helicity is zero, always zero. And in the simulation, the helicity is very small. So it's not a process related to kinematic helicity, and it doesn't produce any magnetic helicity.
You mentioned in one of your slides that formally there's no linear instability with zero net field. Did you just mean the original stability analysis didn't apply in that situation or something?
Well, I mean that if you want to compute the linear instability, the MRI, you need to know what is the configuration of your field. Mm-hmm. And obviously in the case in which you don't have any mean field, you don't really know what is the configuration of your large-scale field.
Well, you could always choose the field that you're using
choose.
In the calculation.
Yeah. For example, here we have chosen one configuration.
Yes.
But a priori, you don't have any guess. Good. Well, you don't really know, and turbulence may actually modify your configuration so that your linear analysis is not true anymore. And you can't really say that the magneto-rotational instability is driving your turbulence if you compare with a case in which you have a mean field, for example.
In in the nonlinear stage, then the linear analysis doesn't apply. And so you could say that even with the mean field in the nonlinear stage,
yes,
the MRI doesn't
yes,
arrive
but
at
you,
either.
Yes, but you can always say that since you have a linear instability, you will always have turbulence. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But you don't really understand why that works in a case when you don't have a mean field.
Yeah, in usual dynamo, the saturation occurs because the Lorentz force acts on the velocity field, and then this provides a nonlinear saturation, right?
Yes.
And here I don't quite see where this happens.
Well, it's here actually. So it's hidden in this reversal here. For weak fields, let's say, you have this positive back reaction. Gamma R is positive, yes? And once you get to stronger field, this field gets reversed, well, this correlation gets reversed, and you have something which prevents the dynamo from going again. So it's actually a kind of saturation, and it's exactly the same thing as saying that gamma is positive for small field and is negative for large enough field. It means that you have saturated your dynamo. And it's actually why you get this cycle.
Okay. Well, I'm stood here with a microphone, so I think I'll ask a question. Can you use the techniques of Francois to locate a potentially unstable periodic solution to your system, and maybe then go to a small magnetic Prandtl number or something?
Are we talking about an exact periodic solution?
Yeah.
Yes. So, it's quite hard to do that in a Schering box because you can't, for example, you can't find a steady non-axisymmetric solution. And if you want to find an exactly periodic solution, your period has to be related to the shear period in some way. So you put some strange constraint on your system. If you want to find an exact
right,
period.
But the period could emerge as an eigenvalue. You could solve it as an eigenvalue. Saying it's easy. I'm just
honestly, I don't know if it's possible to do that. But
yeah.
Yes. But the trouble with the Schering box is that you will have a constraint on the period of your mechanism and the period of the Schering box, because the period provide a typical, the Schering box provide a typical period, and you will have to match the period of your Schering box with the period of whatever is the process. And I think that it might be a problem, because it's already a problem with steady solution.
You showed us a sampling of your simulation. Maybe you could go back to that and tell us what you were seeing in that. You had a Schering box that was operating a dynamo, right?
Yes.
And it has the properties that whatever goes out the right end comes back in on the left-hand end. So you have very fast recycling time. Yes. Did you find some coherent structures that evolved and emerged? Or what was the lifetime of these magnetic structures that you were seeing?
The typical lifetime is about the shear time in the simulation. So the typical period of a cycle is quite large compared to the typical period of the small structure, let's say, you see in the simulation, which are recycled, as you said. If you take a look at this small structure here, they are destroyed quite quickly during the simulation. So it seems that the effect you see here, this cyclic thing, is kind of it's a current process. It's not a random process due to the turbulence. I don't know if it was precisely your question.
Well, it's a difficult to know Schering boxes. Whenever it goes out to the right, it comes
yes.
in on the left.
Yes.
It's
yeah, sure.
Well, you keep your jump right there.
Okay, let us thank Geoffroy again. We'll have a coffee break until 4:10.